welcome to One-on-One with LAPA, the Legislative Analysis and Public Policy Association's podcast series where experts discuss key issues and emerging topics in the areas of public health and safety, substance use disorders, and the criminal justice system. A grant from the Office of National Drug Control Policy, Executive Office of the President, serves as LAPA's primary funding. Neither the Office of National Drug Control Policy nor any other federal instrumentality operate, control, or are responsible for, or necessarily endorse this podcast. I am John Woodruff, LAPA's managing attorney, your host for today's podcast on deflection and pre-arrest diversion. Deflection is a preventative approach to substance use and mental health that offers pathways for a community-based response to occur before an event such as an overdose, arrest, or mental health crisis. My guest today is Jack Charlier, the Executive Director of TASCS Center for Health and Justice, the Executive Director for PTAC, and an expert on deflection and pre-arrest diversion. Explaining those acronyms I just said, TASC, T-A-S-C, is the Treatment Alternatives for Safe Communities, and PTAC stands for Police Treatment and Community Collaborative. Hello, Jack, and thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, John. Pleasure to be here with you.
So you just heard my 20-ish word attempt at a definition of deflection. What do you think should be added, removed, or refined in that definition?
Sounds good, John. I will do that. But first, I do want to thank LAPA for allowing me to be here, both in my role as the Executive Director of TASCS Center for Health and Justice and the Police Treatment and Community Collaborative, PTAC, and also to recognize LAPA for its work in the deflection field, also alongside the Office of National Drug Control Policy in co-creating and updating the first model law on deflection. So I always want to lift you up in the work that you and your colleagues have done on that. As to the opening 20-word-ish definition of deflection that you did, first of all, that was wonderful. That was fantastic. I'll add a few things, but really from the standpoint, John, of one, deflection is new, right? As a field, it's about 10 years old. I like to say we're in about third grade, so we're not kind of fully grown up yet, right? And the other thing is deflection is a little bit like the analogy of the different people who are touching the elephant. Some have the tail, some have the trunk, some have a leg, and they're deciding what it is. Because it's new and people see it from different angles, I would offer just a few very quick kind of add-ons for your listeners to understand it in addition to the words you used. We do say deflection is a community-based initiative at the intersection of, and this is important, of police or law enforcement. And of course, deflection can also be done with EMS. Then the treatment, housing, recovery, and service system and the community. And so we sometimes if we say just community, we might think, oh, it's being done out like in the neighborhoods. But the reality it is being done by organizations, agencies, civic groups that come together to create a framework around which they are going to solve a shared problem. In other words, it's a systems approach, a system strategy, not a programmatic approach. And that then creates this framework. And the cool thing about a deflection framework, John, as you know, is that once you have this framework built of the relationship in a community setting, not in a justice setting, right? So not in courts, prisons, probation, jail, not in an institutional setting either. What you can do with that is address issues of substance use disorder. You can address issues of mental health, co-occurring, homelessness, all sorts of things that go with that individual and their family together, because we don't look at things in isolation. I would also offer another view of deflection that says that deflection sits between prevention and arrest, right? So we've generally thought of there's prevention and then there's a line and then you get to arrest and you're in the justice system. The reality is that deflection, which has always been here, we just could not see it before, really is this kind of gray space between prevention and great prevention efforts and then arrest, post-arrest, and diversion. In between that are lots of opportunities for us to do. And now I'll close with exactly what you said. Get to people early, upstream, without waiting for nor needing a crisis, an arrest, an overdose, or a situation to happen before we act, because we have already been seeing that person many, many times before. And that's where we want to be able to act.
That was an incredibly good explanation of the process as a whole. Obviously, it's easier said than written down, but sort of getting all that captured in. sort of as a follow-up to that, and I, you know, clearly I haven't done as much talking about deflection as you have, but when I'm listening to webinars or seeing people talk, sort of some words, and I don't want to get too hung up on terminology, but sort of the words deflection, diversion, and pre-arrest diversion get thrown out, and they are in some ways similar, in some ways not. And I know, depending on the context, people may use them interchangeably, but I guess the question is, do they exactly refer to the same thing? And if not, what are sort of the differences?
Sure. Let me do the easy one first, which is deflection versus diversion. Diversion simply, and we're going to use diversion, John, today in the context of the justice system, because diversion exists in words and like the medical system, diversion of drugs. This is used within the context of the justice system, so your listeners know. Diversion means that we are in a place where an individual, Jack, is in the justice system, which means I have been booked, I have been charged, and I'm somewhere from there to parole, right? Anywhere from there to parole. That can involve the police, certainly, because the police are the only way into the U.S. justice system is through the police. But diversion squarely sits, I am post-arrest in a space where I'm going to be booked and charged. From that point on, it's diversion, no matter what happens. Diversion matters. Diversion is important. Deflection does not say do this in lieu of diversion. It says let's do this space now in addition to diversion, because there will be people who need to enter the justice system for public safety reasons and for accountability reasons, no doubt about that. What we're saying in deflection, this is the other part of it, is that at those points where no arrest occurs, therefore you have not entered the justice system, we're in the deflection space, again, that early upstream where we're looking to reduce drug use, reduce possible drug-related crime if that's associated, before it ever happens. Once you're in the justice system, something's happened that's got you in there. So think post-arrest, post-booking, charging, diversion. I'll use the phrase very simply, pre-arrest, but where arrest doesn't need to be the condition by which we act, we're in the deflection space. So that's pretty simple. I think folks will get that. Pre-arrest diversion is, like in all things, life is rarely, you know, A or B, black or white, zero or one. Pre-arrest is this interesting space that we know that exists that sits where officers squarely have the ability to make a decision whether or not they're going to arrest someone. That's called in the police world, that's called discretion. Discretion exists in many professions, where they have to make the decision if they're going to arrest someone. They might or they might not. And with deflection at the pre-arrest space, they now have an option that they did not have before to say, we know that what's going on here is being driven by personal drug use, not drug-related crime. We want to be clear on that. Not drug manufacturing, right? Not running a drug cartel. We want to be clear on that. That you go into the justice system for that. This space where the officers need a tool, that tool is deflection, to allow them to say, I know drug use is in play here. I've watched this kind of unfold with this person in front of me and their family. We need to deflect them to treatment, housing services, and recovery. Therefore, the pre-arrest diversion is this kind of, I go left to deflection, or hey, I go right into diversion. This person does need to go in. So pre-arrest is just kind of another option that exists, but it is very much part of deflection. Again, where the officer could make the decision, she could decide to arrest, but she does not need to because now she has deflection, her department has it, and therefore she has the ability to make the decision to say, hey, we're gonna use deflection, community-based treatment, housing services, and recovery, instead of arresting. Again, in cases where there are no public safety issue, we're not getting into any of that in deflection. We're trying to deal early upstream with the addiction.
Gotcha. That helps me, you know, figure out what those differences are. I'm going to ask one more thing related to terminology, or just sort of what's deflection and what isn't. So not that anyone besides someone like me would necessarily do it, but if you start combing state statutes, as you said, deflection is new, certainly in terms of legislative things. 10 years is very new. So there's not a whole lot of stuff on the books that speaks to the word deflection. But if you look for stuff that sort of looks like deflection, there is a number of laws and initiatives out there that talk about sort of mobile crisis response, which I think are geared towards sort of someone having a mental health issue and how that call should be treated. But so I guess the question is that folded in as part of deflection? Is that because it's sort of from the outset mental health separate? Sort of how does the initiatives and things we're going to talk about and have sort of come into play on the substance use side over the last 10 years, how does that sort of mesh with what you might find about a mobile crisis team or a mobile crisis response, that as which are around and in state codes?
If we go back to the definition of deflection that we just used here a few minutes ago, we would see that things like crisis intervention teams, mental health crisis response, mobile response team, 988, all of that sits within the field and movement of deflection. Why do we say that? Well, first of all, it fits definitionally, right? The definition fits it. What we're saying in deflection is that the field and movement, this very clear recognition of the space between prevention and arrest and diversion, that actually has existed for a long time. We just couldn't see it. And so, yes, all these efforts, whether they're mental health, substance use disorder, or whatever it might be, that says when we get to people, if we have an option that does not involve arrest, or by the way, if you're on the EMS side or the medical side, does not involve using an emergency room when that's not needed, it's just the only tool we have available to us, that is deflection. Deflection is not trying to be territorial when we say that, to say, well, all this stuff has been deflection, because some of that stuff has been around for decades, right? We know that. And I already said, well, deflection's only about 10 years old. What we're saying is that these individual efforts, these programmatic efforts that had a very specific and narrow focus, mental health crisis, just as an example, police encounters with those who have mental health issues, CIT going back to 1988, great work, great efforts, but they were programmatic. Deflection says there's actually an entire field and an entire movement around this entire space that sits entirely between prevention, arrest, and diversion. And we can build that out way more than what we have. And then when we do that, we can think of many, many uses for all these encounters that are going on. And they are, by the way, the most dominant encounter that law enforcement have with citizens of the United States is not arrest. You know the data like I do on it. It is not arrest. It is non-arrest encounters by far the majority of what police and citizens are running into. And so we want to say there's a field and there's a movement called deflection. It is, it exists, and it encompasses mental health, substance use disorder, crisis, non-crisis, but really is getting at this early upstream areas where we're not waiting for the overdose, the crisis, the arrest.
How did you become interested in deflection and the space between prevention and arrest? And then how did you become interested in and involved with this work?
Yep. So there's two very quick stories to this. First, I was in state law enforcement in Illinois and sitting in my squad car in the late 90s in an area of Chicago. It was sometime around lunchtime, because I remember I was eating in the squad, and I was just parked kind of safely in an area where I was assigned. And I was, you know, looking through the window, and what I saw was an active open air drug market. And I began to recognize some of the people there. Some of them were kids who were going back and forth to school, right, doing everything as they should be. Some were families out trying to enjoy that the park, but really couldn't because of what was going on. And others were doing kind of the drug trade, drug activity. And a whole bunch of them were people coming in from wherever, coming to buy drugs. And as I began to recognize people, I saw a couple that were generational, like, oh, I think that's, you know, the father and that's the son. And I thought, boy, these tools that we have been giving of enforcement and of supervision are not sufficient for what we need here. It wasn't like a brilliant kind of discovery. It was my discovery of what many people knew. But in the late 90s, we were very much enmeshed into what we call the war on drugs and this idea of let's enforce our way out of it. And as I saw just the flow and the load and kind of the young kids and the adults, and I just said, there's got to be some other way to address this than this. And what I did, and I take no credit for it other than realizing tools I had been given for enforcement were insufficient to deal with this. And I went to local drug treatment facilities, mental health facilities, churches, civic groups. And I said, what do you know about the people you're dealing with? Because many of them are the same people I'm dealing with. What do you know? And so I say that story often to say it marks my education, the re-education of Jack Charlier, squarely kind of in the law enforcement space, to other stuff that we know and have learned about how to deal with drug use that gets to reduce drug use and reduce drug-related crime that we can do. And so for your listeners, coming out of the late 90s, that was not popular. But I began then to take what I had learned, educate myself, educate fellow officers. I became a district commander, eventually a deputy chief, and I brought that then into play into the units. And we're going to also include this in our work. Enforcement matters, but we're going to include this also. The other thread then goes back to 2013, very squarely with Treatment Alternatives Safe Communities Task, where we convened in Chicago about 25, 26 national partners, including the federal government, entities from the federal government, to attend a two-day summit, if you will, in Chicago on this exact idea, John, which was, I had said, you know, told him the same story you just asked me. And I said, what could we do differently? And of course, task being really very much in the space of bridging justice and health, courts and treatment, prisons and treatment, parole and treatment, you get the idea. We took that and said, let's do this with police. Let's bring police in and let's do that with treatment and see what that looks like. For your listeners, again, at the time, drug courts were known, right? That had been done. Intensive probation had been known, which was probation with treatment. But the police were nowhere near involved, kind of, if you will, in this space of law enforcement and treatment or police and treatment. And I do want to give a shout out here to LEAD, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion, to Seattle, which was the original deflection site in 2011. That was the only site at the time where we knew of a couple others, very small, that, you know, very, very small, could count on one hand, of communities that were beginning to innovate around this space of what could police and treatment in a community setting do? The same way other parts of the justice system and treatment had done, but in the community. The word deflection did not exist then. We did use, back to your earlier question, we did use diversion, police-assisted diversion. And so just want to be clear, like, we did not call it deflection right away. The word deflection came about a year and a half later. A colleague of mine co-wrote that in 2014 and then got published in 2015 through the International Association Chiefs of Police, Police Chief Magazine, and that then introduced the word deflection. But its origins are, again, my personal experience, and I am a co-creator. Many, many, many people put in to co-create this field. And then, again, that summit, that national convening and task did of federal agencies, police departments, treatment leaders to say, what could we do differently? And, of course, I always want to acknowledge others out there who were doing their thing, who then, once we recognize it as a field and movement, we could then begin to bring them together and not just have individual sites, but begin, as I said, to do a field and a movement that eventually would be called deflection.
Gotcha. And one quick sort of follow-up is when you were a battalion chief, I think you said, or whatever, when you rose up and brought the idea to, you know, we need to not just be enforcing, but doing some of these other things, was, I'm sure that was a smooth process of getting everybody on board, right? Or what sort of challenges were... did you immediately face, or?
Yeah. You know, what I would say is this, because of the area of law enforcement that I worked in, there were people already who were receptive and understood it. Again, I always talk about it. This is my kind of, you know, the re-education of Jack Charlier. Doesn't mean others didn't see it. I never want to state that I was in that role of some kind of prophetic person. Holding a leadership role allows you to kind of spread it. What I would say is this, there were certainly many who said, we get it, we see it. The difference was they might not have fully known how to actually make it work, right? Understanding something and understanding how to do something to create the change was really the focus that I had. I was not the first person to see what I saw and realize we got to do something different. It was bringing the leadership within the framework of the different systems that we needed to work together. I know that sounds dry and unsexy, but it really is. It's the leadership of how you get people to say, okay, we're going to start working now regularly with drug treatment. We're going to start working now regularly with these civic groups that are in the neighborhoods who are doing similar work, just not in our space, but who we need, and they need us, as we came and found out. So the resistance wasn't resistance per se. It was more, okay, we're good with that, but we don't know how to do it. And that was the evolution of change that began to occur. Again, along with others, and I always want to lift that up.
And that's some of the magic of, you know, of deflection, or even thinking of something else like an overdose fatality review, is not only is it the actual work or initiative or what you're doing, but it's everybody who's there together, right? It's opening the lines of communication such that you can find other avenues to go, you know, now that you've figured out, well, we could involve housing or something. And now it's the next step is let's involve of another thing is getting everybody on siloed. In terms of for your day-to-day work, you know, Center for Health and Justice, Task Center for Health and Justice and PTAC, can you explain a little bit about what each of those things is and what do they do?
Sure. So it's a great question, John. I'll start with TASC and the Center for Health and Justice. So TASC's mission, hence the Center for Health and Justice's mission as a division of TASC, is to promote safe, healthy, and just communities. TASC was founded under the Nixon administration, which a lot of people, of course, say, oh, that's the beginning of the war on drugs. Interestingly, the Nixon administration also founded TASC, Treatment Alternatives to Street Crimes, is what it was called then, founded by the United States Department of Justice, the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration, LEAA, which some of your listeners will recognize was the predecessor to Bureau of Justice Assistance, and then also the predecessor to NIDA, which was the White House Special Office that dealt with substance use, what we now call substance use, but issues around drugs and addiction, again, the predecessor to NIDA. TASC was formed as a way to address the missing linkage between courts, jails, and drug treatment. So think of the 70s. Now we would say, well, this is normal that these like courts and drug treatment work together and jails and drug treatment. Back then, it was not normal. It was something that did not happen. And so the TASC model was a way of saying for Vietnam veterans returning with heroin addiction, and as a military veteran, I'm very proud of this being part of TASC. It was focused initially on how do we stop this so that veterans with heroin addiction do not go into jails and prisons for their addiction and instead get access to treatment. Or if they do go in, we get them into treatment and safely get them out while they're in recovery and back home with their families as military veterans. So that was the origins of TASC, and TASC, of course, grew and went on from there. TASC Illinois, which is the largest TASC in the United States, works statewide in Illinois, and we have employees each and every day who work with police doing deflection, with courts, and with Illinois Department of Corrections, parole and probation, doing work of diversion. The Center for Health and Justice is TASC's national and international technical assistance center. Center for Health and Justice is the U.S. BJA, so Bureau of Justice Assistance, COSIP, Comprehensive Opioid Stimulant and Substance Use Program, Deflection Technical Assistance Center for the COSIP grantees. And so I want to give a shout out to BJA, whose leadership in the field, Director Moore, early on was part of our field, now Director of BJA, for the leadership they provide. And so CHJ serves in that role, and we also do work, of course, nationally and internationally in the deflection space as one of the early founders of the field. PTAC, the Police Treatment and Community Collaborative, is the global voice of the field of deflection. And John, we say pre-arrest aversion, right? Deflection, the word is new. 2015, Chiefs of Police article is new. Deflection and pre-arrest aversion. Even though we tell people, please just use deflection. It's like much easier. It's one word and it's all good. That is a national and global alliance of 65 partners. And I want to recognize here, including LAPA, who come together to grow and develop the field of deflection in all its forms and all its approaches. So while any of those 65 partners, including TASC Center for Health and Justice, can do the technical assistance work that sites need to do deflection, to improve deflection, whatever it might be, the role of PTAC really is more at the how do we grow and develop the field from a policy standpoint, from a research standpoint, from a legislation standpoint, from a funding standpoint, kind of the bigger picture type things. Data collection, not as much. Data architecture and putting it together, much more PTAC's realm. Speaking to legislators, PTAC's realm, very good. Helping a site put something in play, probably more the realm of the 65 partners who make up PTAC, with the exception, of course, of the BGA National Deflection Technical Assistance Center. And that, of course, works alongside the COSIP grantees, this COSIP site-based grantees who are doing deflection, as well as others. You don't need to be, I'll put in a plug for BGA, you don't need to be a COSIP grantee to get assistance on your deflection site through BGA's COSIP.
I'll make the plug for PTAC's website, which has lots of useful information about some of the stuff you already talked to about, you know, the architecture for data collection and what is it. And even if you're looking to like trying to explain deflection to someone else. So that is ptaccollaborative.org, which is ptaccollaborative.org is the website for that. You mentioned PTAC sort of, you know, trying to advance the, you know, the field of deflection. So I've got sort of two related things that are sort of related to that. One is, as you talk to sites or people ask you questions, sort of what are the most common types of initiatives that you face? That's one. And a slightly different thing is, Not most common, but what would you call is cutting edge in terms of deflection activity or where the field seems to be headed?
So on the first part, when we're doing site-based work, right, when the field is doing site-based work, the three most common things, and I say three because they are three that really come up over and over, it is one, how do we know if we have enough resources to do deflection? The question that's asked is deflect to what? In other words, what do we deflect to? Well, that is a very, very common question, which makes sense. We say in deflection, by the way, deflection is about 1/10 law enforcement. Let's just seat this example of deflection in the law enforcement world. It's about 1/10 law enforcement, 9/10 treatment, housing services, recovery, and community, right? And so the deflect to what question is paramount to being able to do deflection or deflection to the scale you might want to do it, right? One-tenth law enforcement is needed because, of course, without law enforcement, and again, for your listeners, just keeping this in the law enforcement space, again, it can be done with EMS, with fire, and it can be done with non-first responders also who are really doing kind of that leveraging of their encounters. But 1/10 is law enforcement, and what that means is we really need them so that we can utilize and leverage the encounters they have, the vast majority of which do not result in arrest. But the 9/10, the change and the interventions that are needed to cause the change that we want, that the families want, that the individual wants, that the community wants, that requires the answer to the deflect to what question. So that's the first thing. The second thing is officer buy-in. Okay, good. We've got our deflect to what built out within the context of our community. That's super cool. Now, how do we get officers to buy in? That is the second biggest. Actually, these are not in order. That's the next question, officer buy-in. And the third one, and this really speaks to why deflection is a community-based collaborative framework. It is not a program. It's not a programmatic element. You build a box, put it together, put stuff in the box, shake the box up, things come out and they're better. I'm not making fun of programs. What I'm saying is that's a program. A framework is a set of relationships between organizations, agencies, community, civic partners, faith partners, whatever it might be, that learn how to work together, collaborate in a system around a shared goal, shared purpose, shared mission. Those are the three top questions that we get. What's the answer to deflect to what? How do we do officer buy-in? How do we make that happen? And third, how do we as community actually collaborate, not in a programmatic structure, legal MOUs, all that stuff, but collaborate, shared goal, shared purpose?
That's awesome. And if you're looking towards the future, like the cutting edge piece of deflection, what would you say is sort of the new or the area where it's going?
So here's what, and I say this very humbly as a co-founder of the field, and you know I always underline the co part, right? It takes many to put this together. As a co-founder of the field and the movement of deflection nationally and internationally, there has been evolution, and here's kind of the answer to your question of, I think, the things that are unfolding that will become the next bigger things. One is more EMS and community-led sites. In 2019, we did a survey, the first survey ever of deflection sites in the United States. This was done, again, through Bureau of Justice Assistance. And we found in that survey that 75% of deflection sites were law enforcement initiated, 15% were EMS initiated, 10% were community initiated. Since that survey was done, 2018, 2019, we know that the changes in American society and the changes in the understanding of the role of law enforcement and community and treatment, by the way, I want to be very clear, right? We got to bring treatment in here and all the things that treatment brings to the table, as well as all the things treatment must change. We know that the number of sites that are EMS initiated and community initiated has increased. So looking to the future, we're going to see more EMS and fire deflection led sites and more community led deflection sites. That's the first thing. Second thing, we're going to see and already are beginning to see briefly the introduction of technology into deflection, because deflection occurs in the community, on the streets, in real time, and then everything that comes after it, accessibility for people through tablets, through telehealth. Telehealth could be a huge game changer in the world of deflection, right? You're not in the justice system. There is no nothing hanging over you. So therefore, we got to know how to connect with you, how to engage with you. Technology is going to be a big game changer there. And the other two very quickly is deflection for veterans. I want to lift that up as something that we launched last year. PTAC launched that along with the VA and the National Institute of Corrections. The idea that our veterans in particular, and John, I want to tie this back in to the origins of TASC. Our veterans in particular need us to be there for them before they have been arrested and put in jail and before they are at the emergency room. Our veterans need us there with them early, upstream, without waiting for the challenges they are facing. And that is deflection for veterans. And again, the partnership between PTAC, Veterans Administration, National Institute of Corrections. And the other area that I know is going to begin to move, so veterans deflection we launched last year. The other area that I know is going to begin to move is what we are terming youth deflection, which is the area where we're doing deflection, but for youth. That seems to make sense, right? And again, we are leveraging these early encounters where we can do something with that young person in our society so that we do not see that again. And why does youth deflection matter? I could go with the cliche that the youth are our future. I don't really want to, even though I just said it. I want to go on the side instead of the research tells us that the younger the age at which a person initiates alcohol and drug use, the worse their future and outcomes are going to be. The younger the age at which a person begins to have criminal behavior or even things that are criminal type activities or local ordinance violations, the worst that can be for that young person as they grow up. All the things that go with kind of being a young person and possibly the people, the places and the things that many of your listeners will recognize those three that they're hanging out with and what they're doing. The earlier we can intercede with our young folks, the more likely we are to not have them go down that path in the first place. So youth deflection is where I'll close out as the four items that I see going forward.
That's all very interesting. And on the youth side, where exactly? I mean, obviously, if there's a interaction between law enforcement and youth, that would be one spot. But where are the other places where the interactions occur? I guess it could be like at church or even sort of wherever. If the people with those organizations sort of, you know exactly how to frame the idea and to do it, I suppose.
No, John, that's a great question. And the way I answer that is very simple. And I appreciate the insight you bring, by the way. When we talk adult deflection, where you don't limit it to law enforcement, EMS, and fire, but certainly we use that as the leverage, if you will. The leverage is in how are we going to find folks early on upstream. We're going to use that. With youth, the best way to answer that, John, and I always, people have asked me this, I say, well, I grew up in the city of Chicago, and I think back to the three kind of areas where I spent the most time, which was with my family, on the streets, or in school, right? That's where you do spend most of the time. You're with your family, you're on the streets, and by streets, I just mean you're out and about with your friends doing whatever, or you're in school. So the family, we're gonna put that aside, although we do include in deflection family, I wanna be clear on that, and deflection is open and available for families to use. You don't have to wait until the police encounter on that. We wanna leverage things that are going on at school, and we wanna do that in a way because deflection then says, in lieu of, at times, when appropriate, we're not going to go down the path of calling the police. We can do a school deflection. And a school deflection means we've got the deflection kind of framework, that community-based framework in play, but the school's utilizing it, and the school's utilizing it. And to your point about kind of where else, absolutely. It could be a young person who's at church. I grew up in the Salvation Army, as I like to say, in Chicago. And so the Salvation Army is where I spent quite a bit of time. And in that case, the Salvation Army could have initiated deflection for me, right? That could have been a possibility without having to route to the police. So we think of family for youth deflection. We think of schools doing deflection, this arena where they're using the deflection resources, the deflection community build, to be able to get young people the access to treatment, housing services, recovery. And we're mindful there's family here too, right? That doesn't happen with a young person on its own. And of course, you're on the street. So we also think of youth deflection as involving still law enforcement, but from that perspective, the early upstream encounters, again, not waiting for the arrest to happen. So great question on the insight. Think of family, think of schools, think of the streets, the three places where you spend most of their time.
I can't let you go without asking a model law related question, given what we do. So as you know, you're in Illinois, and Illinois has a very robust and thorough deflection related law that actually served as the basis for LAPA's model law enforcement and other first responder deflection act. So with that in mind, what would you, to listeners, to everyone else who's listening, who's not in Illinois, what's the, and I view the law, basically my read on it is A, it sort of provides information about the types of deflection, the pathways, but also it sort of says, like, if you get up to this floor level of stuff, you're eligible for grants from the state. So that's my read on it. But from your perspective, what are the positives of having that Illinois law? How has it made a positive impact?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And I do want to give a shout out here to the land of Lincoln, right? My state of my home birth. And as they say, other than in the military or college, so I did college in Illinois also, but other than the military and college, I have been in Illinois my entire life. Illinois was the first state in the union that had a comprehensive deflection law. So it has done a few things. First, it has allowed the state to do formal evaluation, right? It has authorized and provided funding for formal evaluation of deflection sites in Illinois, but also evaluation of the work that goes into the technical assistance on the sites to build them up. What Illinois is doing is building an evidence-based practice around how you develop or ideate, create, implement, and operationalize deflection sites. Without the law, that's probably not happening, right? So it gives the state the ability to do that. Second, the law allows police chiefs, police leaders, and now with the update that happened, EMS and fire leaders to say, this is within our scope and purview to do this in the community. And the law gives us the framework we need within which to do it. Now, you can do deflection in Illinois without the law, but you can't do it in a way that provides, again, what I said, the framework. I've already talked about deflection as a framework. And for police, it's really important that they're operating, obviously, within the sense that this is what I'm supposed to do in the profession of policing, right? This is considered okay and normal. And with anything new, by the way, anything new, you want to provide professions, in this case, police and police departments and communities, an understanding of basically, here's how to do something that's new. Right? You can't just wait on everybody to say, well, I think I'll try that, right? 30 years later, you'd have seven departments doing it. So the framework allowed police leaders to say, yeah, deflection is a thing. It's real. Here's a framework for it. We got to make it adjust for our community, but it exists. So first, evaluation, looking at how to put in deflection and how it's doing. Second, the Illinois deflection legislation allowed then police to have the framework they're needed. And third, the Illinois legislation, the comprehensive deflection legislation, set in motion then as a result of just kind of its existing, as communities began to build deflection sites, they realized what we had known already but hadn't seen kind of at scale yet was that these relationships that the legislation said, you should bring treatment together, you should bring recovery together, you should bring the civic world together, you should bring law enforcement together, the law allows that, and of course they can do it, but said this framework then is useful for other things. Oh, now let's do it with EMS. So it evolved to open up to EMS and fire. Oh, now let's make sure we have specialized case management, which is what task practice is, right? Task specialized case management. Also in the National Drug Control Policy, by the way, to bring that in, right? So it opened up then avenues for others to see deflection as something they have a role in. It's not just law enforcement, as we've already talked about. In fact, and I want your law enforcement listeners to listen to hear that deflection is not by any means put on law enforcement. They are asked to participate in it, but it's really the community that has to do the lift. And that is the final answer to the legislative question that you asked me, right? Is that it clearly said, we're not going to just put this on police. We're not going to put it on treatment. If we're going to do deflection in Illinois, we're going to do it collaboratively. We're going to do it comprehensively, and we're going to do it in a community setting.
All right. One final question. And I know I'm going to give you, there's probably, 100 things to think about, but if someone listening to this or already has been thinking about it, how I would like to start a deflection initiative, get the framework starting to be there in my community, but it's not really there yet. I know nothing is one size fits all, but is there a recommendation for a process or a first step or something to sort of figure out what might make the most sense for that community? So they go from just the idea is in my head to actually feet on the ground trying to start it.
Absolutely. So I would say that the good starting point or a good starting point is to COSSUP.org, COSSUP.org, COSSUP.org. That's the Bureau of Justice Assistance COSSUP initiative. That's federal, that has access to technical assistance. And again, you don't have to be a grantee, but you can also apply to be a site-based grantee for deflection through COSSUP. So COSSUP.org, and then put in deflection, and you will see resources that are available for folks to get information on how to do it. There are two federal e-courses on deflection that are available now. One is available on the COSSUP site under Bureau of Justice Assistance. The other one is under the NIDA site, National Institute on Drug Abuse, under JCOIN. So that's a great e-course that NIDA has for deflection, as well as BJA has through COSSUP. Those are fantastic e-courses. And of course, the COSSUP site has webinars that are available. It has guides that are available. It has learning and affinity groups that people can sign up for. And again, you don't need to be a grantee for all that, as well as technical assistance. You've already mentioned PTAC, the Police Treatment and Community Collaborative, and that is always going to be a place that sites, states, policymakers, not just sites, elected officials, researchers can go to find out more about the field globally and who to connect with. And of course, in our role, as you open up, ask me who I'm with, Task Center for Health and Justice at centerforhealthandjustice.org. You can take a look at available resources there and tools that can help you think through, in other words, ideate what you might want to do with deflection, then begin to plan it out, then to implement it, and then to operationalize it. And so through COSSAP, PTAC, and CHJ, and PTAC will get you a whole bunch of other organizations. I couldn't name all 65 that are in the field, but I always want to say that because PTAC's a collaborative, including LAPA, that does different parts of the work, the legal part, the research part, the data part, whatever it might be. And so PTAC will get you kind of the broad breadth of everything that's there.
That's all the time we have for today. And I want to thank you, Jack, for this wonderful, for taking time out of your schedule to do this, and for being, as always, incredibly informed and expressive about all the facets to deflection. And so thank you very much.
My pleasure. And again, to LAPA, thank you.
So thank you to Jack Charlier, the Executive Director of Task Center for Health and Justice, the Executive Director for PTAC. Please join us again for the next one-on-one with LAPA, where we will discuss another interesting topic. In the meantime, if you would like to learn more about deflection, you can go to legislativeanalysis.org and search for the word deflection. There are also other resources we've mentioned in this podcast, including COSSUP.org, the PTAC Collaborative, PTACCollaborative.org, Center for Health and Justice, where other research may be found. And you can also email LAPA at info@thelapa.org. Thank you, everyone, for listening.